From boom to bust, or at least a slowdown. I'm Jennifer Shveta Jordan. This is the Allegheny Front. One community in New York wonders if its windfall from the natural gas industry was worth it, while residents in another town in Pennsylvania worry government officials are too cozy with the industry. Plus, here in Pittsburgh, it's not only real flowers that adorn the Phipps Conservatory and Botanical Gardens' new show. Local artists are also showing flowers and even animals made from glass. Please stay tuned to the Allegheny Front. In recent years, natural gas drilling rigs have popped up across large swaths of western and northern Pennsylvania. But the impacts of the drilling boom haven't been confined to the boundaries of the Marcellus Shale region. State Impact Pennsylvania's Marie Cusick reports on how one central Pennsylvania city, miles from the gas wells, has become deeply divided over the industry's influence on their community.
This is a story about an influential businessman, a dysfunctional local government, a skeptical public, and a mysterious pile of dirt. The dirt is in a rail yard in the city of Sunbury in Northumberland County, an hour north of Harrisburg. It's surrounded by a tall barbed wire fence. There's an electronic call box at the gate.
Calling. No answer. Call later.
No answer. That's a common reply when you begin to ask questions about what's going on here. City Councilman Joe Bartello heads the Department of Public Safety, which includes overseeing code administration. He's been asking a lot of questions and not getting many answers. He's wondering where all this dirt is coming from. He's worried because this old industrial site is right next to a residential neighborhood in a floodplain next to the Susquehanna River.
We're looking out over where the factory used to be, but now there's just piles and piles of new fill that's been brought into the site, raising the level of the land at least 6 feet.
But he says he hasn't gotten much help from the rest of the city government or the State Department of Environmental Protection.
You know, there's really no information. We always get the same answer. There's nothing going on.
The DEP declined multiple requests for an interview for this story, but a spokesman for the agency says there are no violations on the site and it complies with the law. But there's a vocal group of people here who disagree, and they say they have a good reason to worry about what's going on. That's because 2 years ago, this rail yard became a shipping hub for natural gas drilling waste. Trucks rolled into town and loaded up rail cars with drill cuttings. That's the waste dirt and rock from drilling that can contain chemicals and naturally occurring radioactive materials. Cora Campbell lives across the street from the site.
Right there is where, right by that pole there, is where they would park the railroad cars.
She says occasionally the trucks would leak.
Sometimes it was that juicy that it would fly out over into the street.
Her neighbor, Jerry Hoagland, says the smell got so bad at times, she had to keep all her windows shut.
Sort of like gas and oil together, maybe. It was nauseating.
The gasways stopped coming through town last year, but many people here believe that's due to the overall slowdown in drilling, not any regulatory enforcement. City Councilman Joe Bartello agrees.
DEP surprised me very much because I thought they were here to protect the people, and what looks like the just non-enforcement of the codes has really left me wondering what DEP's purpose really is.
So what laws were allegedly being broken here and who exactly is to blame? Well, it turns out those aren't easy questions to answer. The site is owned by a Watsontown trucking and logistics company called Moran Industries. The railroad moving the gas waste was Norfolk Southern. The railroad declined to comment for this story. A spokesman for Moran Industries wouldn't go on tape, but said, quote, "We are confident there will be a nice reuse on this site." Moran Industries made news last year when it was revealed that its owner, John Moran Jr., paid for a vacation on a yacht and private flights for Governor Corbett. He's also given the governor tens of thousands of dollars in campaign contributions, and more recently, Moran joined Corbett on a trade mission to South America. Bartello thinks that's part of the problem.
You know, when you see the joint vacations and everything else from the very top of the state down to the mayor of Sunbury. I'm not really sure why all the inaction, why not enforcing of our laws.
The state did respond to residents' complaints, but in early 2012, more than a year after the gas waste started coming into town, the DEP decided the facility didn't need a permit. The agency cited a federal law known as the Clean Railroads Act of 2008. The law was actually meant to close a legal loophole and increase state and local oversight of polluted rail yards.
The Clean Railroads Act, in closing the loophole, preserved a much smaller loophole for the oil and gas industry.
Mark Zebist is an attorney with the environmental group Penn Future.
Transloading facilities that were engaged solely in transloading oil and gas wastes still did not need to get a permit, and still were not subject to state and local regulation.
So although no state permit was needed, the DEP still said the facility has to comply with all Pennsylvania and federal laws. But some people in Sunbury say the site isn't complying with the city codes. Drake Saxton lives about an hour away in Lycoming County and says he's had a bad experience with gas drilling on his land. But he grew up in the city and still owns property in the area. He's been poring over the city codes and says they're not being enforced.
That you are in violation of Article 1, subsection 148.2.
Saxton is concerned that when it rains, this mystery dirt could be running off into nearby yards or the river. He says the city is supposed to have a stormwater management plan from Moran Industries.
When I see that my hometown is going to be assailed with that kind of pollution, it causes you to have a lot of angst. And I thought, you know, I'm going to do what I can to prevent that.
Sunbury Mayor David Persing says there's nothing improper or illegal going on at the site, although he admits he doesn't know where the dirt is coming from. Councilman Bartello says he's so fed up that he's decided to run for mayor against Persing. When the issue came up at a recent city council meeting, it devolved into a shouting match.
I have an employee who's supposed to...
And the two men were in the middle of it.
It's not for council. It's already a law. Council doesn't have to vote to get a stormwater plan. I can't give you any more than you already have.
You never gave me a thing!
You have the code book!
What the hell did you give me?
Read the code book!
Bartello says he's asked Moran Industries to explain the origins of the dirt and give him a stormwater management plan.
I'm not asking for anything outrageous. You know, it's in our code books. They knew our codes before they came here.
So far, he hasn't gotten an answer. Instead, a law firm representing Moran filed a right-to-know request to comb through Bartello's city-owned computer. It turns out that shouting matches are not all that uncommon at Sunbury City Council meetings. But resident Ruth Real says she still left the meeting without getting an answer to her question.
What's in the dirt and where did it come from?
Marie Cusick, State Impact Pennsylvania, Sunbury.
For more information about State Impact Pennsylvania, visit AlleghenyFront.org for a link. State Impact Pennsylvania is a collaboration among WITF, NPR, and WHYY in Philadelphia to cover the Commonwealth's energy economy.
A new report called Taken by Storm by the National Wildlife Federation is highlighting the issue of excessive fertilizer runoff into Lake Erie. The resulting algal blooms can seriously impact the health of those who rely on the lake's water, the Innovation Trail's Ashley Hassett reports.
The report focuses on Ohio's Mame River and describes an increase in toxic algal blooms in watersheds connected to Lake Erie, largely due to global warming. Melinda Coslow is the regional manager for the NWF. She says the blooms are created when heavy rainfall washes excess fertilizer and manure off fields and into waterways.
These thick green mats of algae are not only unsightly, they are a huge problem. Harmful algal blooms can sicken or even kill people or pets. They can harm wildlife, hurt outdoor recreational opportunities like swimming, and cost municipalities more money to treat drinking water.
Coslow says Western New York's shoreline and Lake Erie is relatively safe, but the threat can spread with algal blooms already reaching Cleveland. She says the report is a wake-up call for local, state, and federal officials to come up with solutions and provide stronger support for the restoration of wetland areas.
The basin only has 5% of the wetlands it used to have pre-settlement, and so it's really, really small. small, but we're bringing those back to life, and that'll help filter some of the nutrients coming down the pipe.
Director of the Graham Environmental Sustainability Institute, Don Scavia, contributed to the report. He says it's also important to insert a clause into the Farm Bill that would require farmers to participate in conservation studies in order to access crop insurance and subsidies. In Buffalo, I'm Ashley Hassett for the Innovation Trail.
I'm Jennifer Shveta Jordan. This is the Allegheny Front. World-famous glass art from the likes of Dale Chihuly has graced Phipps Conservatory and Botanical Gardens' plant and flower collections over the years. But for its newly opened summer show, the conservatory invited perhaps lesser-known regional artists to showcase their work. I toured the new exhibit and spoke with some of the artists.
I'm Matthew McCormick.
And I'm Jen Figg.
And we live in Baltimore. We met on an artist residency in Tennessee 3 years ago and started collaborating on artwork together. So we got invited by the Phipps to make a piece here and decided to make the passion flower plant. So there's 220 pieces of hand-blown glass on a twisting vine that create two arches for the entrance.
Yes, it's almost an intersecting arch, a little bit asymmetrical. We were thinking that would be really interesting for the eye. All of the steel of the vine is all hand-worked, hammered, and formed.
This is the third botanical kind of inspired piece that we've done together.
Do you have an affection for doing nature kind of pieces?
Especially pieces that have an interesting story. So the passion flower plant has kind of a mythology with Christianity, with the form of the plant.
The corona of the flower is likened to the corona around Christ's head.
So and there's the three crosses.
And then three crosses.
At the center with the stamens. So yeah, so that inspires the name, the passion flower. But it's super invasive in some areas, and so we wanted to see how it could be overtaking architecture and the idea that you're in this botanical garden, that if there weren't people caring for it or trimming it, these trees are going to grow through the roof and overtake the entire city or entire, you know, as kudzu, it's overtaking like large parts of the South. So thinking about that and the passion flower and this architecture.
But it's also a medicinal. So the passion flower is used for asthma. It reduces the inflammation of the lungs, and it's also has a calming effect on the body. So this, all of this brings it together for us to make it really, really interesting.
And is it also the source of the passion fruit? Is that what these sort of light bulb-like parts are?
Yeah, the passion flowers, some of them are edible, some of them are not. So the ones that are, quote, ripe are the ones that are orange. So we were trying to have different parts of the plant in both birth and through death. And so the fruits are part of that.
I'm Diane Tananas. I'm a glass artist from Peninsula, Ohio.
Describe what you have in the new show.
Queen Anne's lace flowers that are made in a glass-making process called pot de verre. Pot de verre means paste of glass. There are approximately 103 flowers in here. I think that's what the final count is. It's kind of a kick for me to hear people come in here and look at these flowers and say, oh, that's Queen Anne's lace, and oh, I thought that was a real flower. And I wasn't originally intending to reproduce that specifically, but to create the essence of the delicacy of Queen Anne's lace. That was my goal, to have like this quiet beauty of the Queen Anne's lace flower. So to think about the idea of actually achieving that is really very special to me.
I'm Gary Guidosh, and I live in Greenfield.
And can you describe what you have in today's show?
A flower nature scene with water lilies and kind of wacky birds, they're calling them, running around in between the plants and some cattails.
How long have you been doing this?
I've been working in glass for 16 years. I learned doing traditional Venetian style work. I used to do goblets and pitchers and bowls, and I didn't like it that much. Because you had to be specific. And I'm not that kind of person. I wanted to do fun things, so then nature lets me do that, because nothing's the same in nature. It's all a little different, a little fun. It works for me.
Those were the voices of artists in Phipps Conservatory and Botanical Gardens' summer show, which incorporates glass artwork from around the region. See photos of the work at AlleghenyFront.org. I'm Jennifer Shveta Jordan. A pair of bills moving through the state legislature aim to give Pennsylvania consumers more access to the Commonwealth's abundant natural gas reserves. State Impact Pennsylvania's Marie Cusick has more.
Republican Senator Gene Yaw of Lycoming County is the primary sponsor of both measures. Although he lives in the midst of the Marcellus Shale drilling, he says he doesn't even have the option of natural gas service at his own home.
Here we are, Pennsylvania has one of the largest gas deposits in the world, and the citizens of Pennsylvania can't take advantage of it.
Both bills have been approved by a Senate committee. One promotes the extension of gas lines to consumers who would bear the costs themselves over time. The other shifts $15 million from a fund to promote high efficiency or green buildings and directs the money to expanding natural gas services to schools, hospitals, and small businesses. A spokeswoman for the State Public Utility Commission says they don't keep track of who has access to gas services, but about half of Pennsylvanians use it for heating. Marie Cusick, State Impact Pennsylvania.
And we wanted to know what environmental groups thought of the idea of paying for the natural gas program by taking money out of a separate program to promote energy efficiency. We reached George Yugovic of Penn Future, and he did like some aspects of the bill.
We're supportive of getting schools and other institutions switched over from a dirty coal to cleaner natural gas, but we do not support taking that money away from high energy efficiency programs.
We'll continue following this story at AlleghenyFront.org. I'm Jennifer Shveta Jordan, and you're listening to The Allegheny Front. So we've been talking about energy efficiency and home heating. In a cold winter like we just had, those home heating bills sure do pile up. They can drain home finances and the environment. WPSU's Emily Reddy went in search of solutions for her own energy woes. She found a program gearing up at Penn State to help homeowners just like her.
My boyfriend and I bought our first house last April. We were sold on the hardwood floors, stone fireplace, and arched doorways. Built in the 1870s, it had been the one-room schoolhouse for the town of Lamont, and it spoke to our sense of history. The house was charming, except for the massive iron furnace that's at least 50 years old.
Yes, meet the furnace.
Does it have a name?
It should have a name.
Horus or Thor or something.
That's Dr. David Riley. Riley is the executive director of the Penn State Center for Sustainability.
They don't make them like that anymore. And there's a reason.
We knew the furnace would need to be replaced, but that wasn't our only problem. On gusty days, cold air came in around doors and windows. It was time to do something. I poked around online and found the National Energy Leadership Corps at Penn State University Park. Riley heads the program. He and two students are at our house for an energy audit.
It was Eddie and...
Yes. Fuju.
Fuju.
Eddie Udegbe and Fuju Wu are still in training. Fuju takes the lead. She explains the purpose of the project, then tells us she'll be asking a lot of questions.
Different houses have different issues. We want to know your house and help you to have your personal energy profile.
Fuju is a PhD student at Penn State. She flips through several pages of questions about safety, conservation measures, and renewable energy. Do we have smoke alarms? Yes. How often do we keep the heat at 68 degrees or lower? Always. She asks us to grade ourselves on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being most satisfied.
How satisfied are you with your home overall efficiency?
So like a 4.
Riley says it's time for the home tour.
We're going to go outside for a bit, and then we'll come back in.
Yeah.
Outside, Riley takes infrared pictures with a device that looks like a handheld barcode scanner. Fuju jots notes. Eddie takes pictures on an iPad.
Different sides, you get back far enough.
The three circle our house before they head back inside. They check out appliances in the kitchen and laundry room, take more pictures, and measure the windows.
52. Water heater down there, too?
Back in the basement, Riley notices the room is toasty. Thor, the furnace, and the uninsulated pipes are losing a lot of heat. We're basically heating an extra 500 or 600 square feet of unfinished basement.
And if you replace your furnace, it'll get colder down here because you won't be bleeding so much heat down into the space.
Next, we all go to another part of the basement, a room that's a finished addition.
We've closed it off to save on heating, so it'll be cold down here.
Okay. Your unfinished basement is comfortably warm, and your finished basement is a popsicle.
They measure more windows, then head upstairs.
Can I see the thermal camera, Eddie?
Riley points the camera at a window and wall. The wall glows blue on the screen. The window is an orangey yellow. Riley renders his verdict.
Everything in this house is backwards. You've got a heated, unheated basement. You've got your windows warmer than your walls. And the few windows that actually are receiving a little solar energy, you've got very well insulated to keep it out of your house.
Sheesh, tell me some good news. Before they can make recommendations, Fuju says they'll have to analyze the data.
We will go through all the pictures and all the conversation we have today, and we will have more clear picture about how to recommend you to reduce your energy usage.
The National Energy Leadership Corps, or NELC, is part of a larger Penn State effort. It's supported by Penn State's Energy Efficient Building Hub, located at the Philadelphia Navy Yard. On a visit to Penn State in 2011, President Obama lauded the hub for its research on reducing energy use in new and existing buildings. And while the hub focuses on commercial buildings, the NELC focuses on residential energy savings. Riley has created online modules, activities, and even an iPad app so professors can easily integrate the program into classes. The goal is to take the NELC national and make a dent in energy used by U.S. homes. At the same time, students get hands-on experience in the growing world of green jobs. But Riley says this program won't prepare students to answer homeowners every question.
They're there to gather some information and absorb some priorities and concerns of homeowners, and then go back and take some time, develop a report, get some advice on that report, and then deliver a report that's useful.
A week after the home energy audit, Riley emails us their report. We meet in person to go over it, though usually the student talks with the homeowner about the results. A couple of things jump out. Our house has scored a 4.8 on the EPA Home Energy Yardstick.
Yeah, so the Home Energy Yardstick is a pretty simple tool that takes your utility costs and the size of your house, and it reflects how your house stacks up to others of similar size. Even though it's not that big, you're using a pretty significant amount of energy, and you know that score from 1 to 10 is a pretty powerful motivator, got your attention.
Every audit ends with 5 recommendations. Ours include insulate hot water pipes, easy. New siding with built-in insulation, that's a bigger investment. And of course, a new furnace.
But it would really involve having a technician come out to your house.
Penn State's project is currently small, but Riley hopes they'll eventually train enough students to be able to offer free or low-cost energy audits to anyone who wants one. And a website is in the works that would provide a lot more resources. Meanwhile, Riley says our house will be a case study for his classes. And if we do everything they suggest in their report, we'll save $2,000 a year on energy bills. I'm Emily Reddy, WPSU.
Thanks to WPSU for that story. You're listening to the Allegheny Front. I'm Jennifer Shveta Jordan. We look now to our neighbors in New York. The city of Elmira is just 7 miles from the Pennsylvania border. And for 4 years, the natural gas boom in Pennsylvania's northern tier crossed over the border and boosted Elmira's economy. But now that boom has slowed down. And as Innovation Trail's Matt Richmond reports, there's disagreement in Elmira about whether a temporary boom is worth the costs.
At a public lecture organized by an Elmira anti-fracking group, three well-known speakers laid out the arguments against fracking.
So that's a typical fracking site. It's not 1 acre. It's not here today, gone tomorrow. That's heavy industrialization that's going to be there for years.
Cornell professor Tony Ingrafia spoke first. He's a co-author of a controversial study claiming that fracking's methane emissions could cause more rapid climate change than the use of coal. Ingrafia was brought to Elmira by a group pushing for a local ban on fracking. Elmira is the largest city in Chemung County and, along with nearby Binghamton, is a center of commerce in the heart of the gas-rich Marcellus Shale. And like Binghamton and its mayor, Matt Ryan, Elmira's mayor, Susan Skidmore, is strongly opposed to fracking.
I don't think anybody can make it safe enough to protect our water and our environment.
Skidmore points to the industrial zone in neighboring Horseheads as an example of what comes with fracking. There, rail cars bring in silica used in the fracturing process. It's then loaded onto trucks and sent to Pennsylvania.
So when you go down there and you stand on a city street, which is right around the corner, you can see these piles of silica that have been released from the undercarriages of the rail cars.
In industrial settings, inhaling silica can lead to the lung disease silicosis. For years, the federal government has delayed rules to protect workers exposed to silica because of industry opposition. The Environmental Protection Agency doesn't regulate silica released into the air.
Why would I be happy about it? I'm not too happy about it. I want some better control over it. That's for one thing.
And the prosperity that came to the Elmira area with intense drilling across the border has begun to subside, too. During the peak of activity between 2008 and 2011, Chemung County had a median income growth of 27%, according to County Executive Tom Santulli. But starting in 2012, that growth began to reverse. That led to a $3 million decline in sales tax revenue. Santulli says the growth and last year's decline were mainly driven by the natural gas industry across the border.
You know, right now we're somewhat of in a slump, and obviously there's no business being driven by New York because we're not doing it.
Fracking opponents point to quick reversals like the one in Chemung County as a reason to be wary of the industry's promises of economic revival. But County Executive Santulli adds that the cycles in the natural gas industry where companies shift their focus from region to region are similar in any sector of the economy.
I can't think of any occupation or any job or any company, General Motors, Ford, IBM, that you're guaranteed a job and a full job for forever in large numbers.
Economist Jeanette Barth also spoke in Elmira. Barth frequently writes and gives lectures on the long-term economic effects of the natural gas industry.
Areas of the United States having the highest levels of long-term poverty tend to be found in the very places that were once the site of thriving extractive industries.
Barth went on to cite studies that found it's the people at the lowest end of the economic scale who feel most of the negative impacts that come along with drilling. Fracking in New York is on hold while the State Department of Health reviews health impacts. But at least in Elmira, the process of dealing with the industry is already well underway. In Elmira, I'm Matt Richmond for the Innovation Trail.
Reporting by the Innovation Trail is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Thanks for listening to the Allegheny Front. Kathy Naur is the executive producer of our show. Janelle Pfeiffer is the production director and our social media diva. Her latest quest is to find out what you do when you're listening to the Allegheny Front. Let us know on Facebook or Twitter. Join us again for more environmental news around your home on the Allegheny Front.
The Allegheny Front is supported by the Heinz Endowments, the Remmel Foundation, administered by PNC Charitable Trusts, the Laurel Foundation, and the A.D. and J.W. Wilson Fund of the Pittsburgh Foundation. The Richard King Mellon Foundation and the Curtis and Edith Munson Foundation support coverage of Marcellus Shale issues.